Hi, my name is Paula Underwater.
Hi, I'm Aquascape Adventure Ryan.
Welcome to Rumblefish,
your underwater journey.
Good afternoon, Ryan.
Good afternoon. How you doing?
Good, very good. I'm excited. Today we have another great guest with us.
We have a fun guest, huh? And he's actually kind of local-ish compared to where we've been.
You know, Southern California and Northern California. Sometimes we have issues, yeah. But we're all California. What do we have on the other side? Do you want to introduce yourself?
Yeah, it's Tom, Tom Barr. A lot of people know me. Quite a few hate me.
Hey, you know, haters gonna hate.
And if you don't have a hater group, you're no expert. That's for sure.
You're not doing good enough.
At least two hater groups.
Well, welcome. So, welcome, Tom. Yeah. Thanks for being with us today and giving us some of your time.
Sure.
So we're excited to learn about your underwater journey. How did you get exposed to the hobby? How did you get into the hobby? How long ago? How did that happen? And all of that jazz.
I actually don't know when I first started getting interested necessarily in the hobby, because my dad was a biologist. And growing up, we'd go out and do field work. And his best friend, who had an office right next to it, was an ichthyologist, a guy named Bob Keeney. Mm-hmm. And he specialized in darters, American darters, and had all these jars of fish everywhere. My dad was an entomologist. He studied mostly crab and beetles. And so we used to go out a lot to do field work, and he'd bring me along always, because what are you going to do with the four-year-old or three-year-old? You know, you can't send him to school. And so it's like, well, you take him, and I'll take care of the other kids. So I would go into these caves and creeks a lot of times. This is back in the Midwest in Kentucky, and I would see all these fish, and I was always just fascinated by them. And so I'd want to get a net and try and catch them. And I got an old metal wash pan back in the days when people did hand washing. I don't know if people even do that anymore. And I would take that to the creek, and I would catch the fish with a net. And with the little net, catching fish in a creek with the little net's tough. Mm-hmm. And so that didn't work too well. So I got two tomato steaks and then put a net across that. And I got some net material from a neighbor, and that worked great. And so then I brought the fish home in this tub. Well, it's about a half mile home, and you got this big thing of water with the fish. And I managed to get it home somehow. The little wagon had a little wagon, mm-hmm. pulled it.
Little red wagon.
And got it home. And then slowly, surely, the temperature went up. They started gasping and they died. At that point, I knew I needed to do something else. Mm-hmm. And the parents did too. And so we ended up getting a small little fish tank with an air stone. And first fish I had was an Otis cinclus, actually. Yeah. I got a tropical fish. And then Julichromis reagani. That was the second fish I got. I liked Tanganyikans, mm-hmm. and Malawian cichlids. And I got into those pretty heavily. And then pretty much every freshwater fish and a lot of saltwater fish from there. I collected plants, I think, from the creek, mm-hmm. in when we moved to Indiana. And there was a little creek. We had like 62 acres out in Greene County, out in some rural county in the hills of southern Indiana. And I got some Creeping Charlie, and it was just growing out there, either wild or native or introduced. I'm not sure which. And they had darters out there. The darters wouldn't live because it's just too hot, mm-hmm. in the aquarium up in my attic room. It was all the heat came up there. But I started working at the fish gallery because I hung out there. There's a store in Bloomington. And the owner just hired me, and he just goes, you know, hey, you know, do you want to work here? And you're hanging out here a lot. I'll put you to good use. And I'll give you $2 an hour cash, or I'll give you $3 an hour credit. Of course, you know, you know he's going to take credit because he's looking at all this fish. So we had parrots, we had saltwater fish, and we had a lot of fish tanks, a lot of freshwater fish tanks. So me and another kid there, John Casey, cleaned fish tanks and did everything except run the cash register, did everything except handle the cash. Mm-hmm. And unless you're like the owner's kid or something like that, that's not going to happen these days. 10-year-old, 12-year-olds aren't going to do that. Mm-mm. So yeah, I got quite a background there. When I turned about 19 or so, I had moved to Elkhart, Indiana, and was doing van conversions. That was a big thing back in the 80s. And had enough cash and enough know-how and to build cabinets. And so I was thinking, well, I can build these cabinets for all these stores. I know all these store owners now. Why don't I do wholesale? And so I tried that, and I got in with a crook, you know, some guy who was just a BSer, and learned that was a business lesson. Mm-hmm. So, later on, you know, I'd kept tanks that whole time. And I think Dupla had come out in the 70s, and I didn't see any of that stuff really until I moved to California in the mid 80s. And, there was a couple people that were looking for somebody to set up their tank for them. And they had a lot of cash, and they wanted to do the Dupla thing. And I set up a couple tanks for them, and then cared for them a little bit for them. But they pretty much did most of it themselves, though. They just wanted somebody to kind of set it up and get them started. I think after that, there was a point, you know, when I had some questions. I was looking at the Aquatic Gardeners Association, and some people, I was like, there, some of the stuff that they're saying is not right. You know, there's a logical fallacy going on here. I didn't know how to express that. Mm-hmm. I just knew in my head that there's a way to figure this out that they're having problems with. And they had all these old myths from like the 50s, still present, and they're still there.
Yeah.
And Jeff was really, he was like really angry about this. You know, it's like, here we are almost 2022, and we still have these same myths from the 1950s, you know, going on. I go, well, you know, it's you know, a good myth's hard to kill. You know, it's an old story. So I think at that point, you know, I started, you know, typing stuff online. And I was one of the first people just said, you know, you don't need test kits to be a good aquascaper, to keep plants. Stuff like that. You don't need it. Mm-hmm. And, you know, and I got a lot of blowback from that. A lot of hate.
We're on your team on that one.
But I mean, today, a lot of people and almost all the experts will acknowledge that. They'll say, you don't need that. You know, mm-hmm. if you just look at the plants, care for them good, do the basic maintenance stuff that's required for planted tanks. You don't need all that. You don't need the brands. You don't, you know, none of that stuff. So, you know, it really pestered some people, and I didn't have the cred that I did, you know, like today. That's what Jeff was saying. And Jeff didn't have the cred back then either.
Say Jeff, you're talking about
Jeff Sinsky.
Okay.
Jeff Sinsky and Jeff and Mike Sinsky at Aquarium Design Group. Mm-hmm. They, they've done everything as far as, you know, Tanganyikan tanks, SBS coral tanks, LPS tanks, planted tanks, aquascaping, mm-hmm. 600 clients, 30 employees, a retail shop. Mm-hmm. You know, they've done pretty much everything at a really high level. And so somebody comes to him and says, well, I don't believe you because, you know, I'm a big talking head on YouTube, or I'm somebody on forum who, Mr. Cranky Pants. There we go. That's me. And I'm going to poo-poo you with words. And let's see your tank. You know, oh, well, I don't have a, you know, or, you know, there's some excuse always. And, you know, Jeff pops up or I pop up. And I put up a picture of a nice tank. I go, well, here I'm adding phosphorus, you know, at 5 parts per million twice a week. And you're telling me that phosphorus causes algae. Really? Where's mine? Let me see your tank. Mm-hmm. Let me see your example. And it's a big old can of shut up when you have that ability. And today we do, because we have the smartphones, we've got YouTube, we've got, you know, photos, all that stuff. In the 90s, we had simple text and that was it.
Yeah.
And so I had to kind of, you know, work with the logic, and I used, you know, phosphate as an example, because I just had a high school education at that point. I had, you know, dad was a research biologist, all that. But, you know, I knew I was right because I had falsified this guy's hypothesis. He made a hypothesis, said, if you keep phosphate within this narrow range, you won't get algae. That was, and it sounded reasonable. This mm-hmm. presented. The guy has a PhD in organic chemistry. they'd done this, you know, several, you know, not just one, but several tests, mm-hmm. and they all came to that same conclusion. And I'm like, this can't be right because, you know, we're adding it and I'm not getting any algae.
It's gotta be something right. else.
So it's something else. So you have to reject that hypothesis and accept the alternative. Mm-hmm. And
well, that's, you know, that's how the scientific method works.
Yeah, exactly. And unbeknownst to me at the time, I mean, I sort of knew it in the back of my head, but, you know, it wasn't, you know, it's just that principle of falsification. And that's the main, one of the main tenets in the scientific method. But that logic, even the guy with, you know, the guy with the PhD in organic chemistry, a guy named Paul Sears, really smart, really interesting guy. I liked him a lot. He said, yeah, you know, he goes, he didn't want to admit it, but he did. He did admit it and say, you know, I was wrong. And, you know, this, it's something else. I don't know what it is. You know, do you know what it is? And well, you don't know what it is either. And I'm like, well, that's not the point. Point is this one hypothesis and you make another one. If not this, well, then let's try up a new hypothesis and you make another one and then another one. And then and you keep going until, you know, you get some sort of understanding, some truth. You know, you're trying to go after the topic, the truth. And you can beat that topic up without taking it personal. And I feel like a lot of the AD aquatic digest, plant aquatic digest, they did a lot of that. And it was just seeking the truth. And some of it was fun, banter and that kind of stuff. And, you know, we got the trolls popping in here and there. and then, you know, you started getting forums and then you get getting, you know, little trolls and hater groups and, oh, you're wrong. Oh, it's this. Oh, it's that. You got people sort of taking other people's work, calling it their own, that kind of stuff. But I think about that time, I figured out that, you know, if the people would just do the friggin' water changes, keep good, you know, sort of notion on their CO2, trim their plants, keep the tanks clean, that kind of stuff. You don't add the ferts, then you don't need to do the testing. Nobody signed up for that. I mean, nobody, right. Your new person comes in and goes, oh, I want to test water twice a week. Yeah. I've never met person yet, you know, that wants to do that. Some of them, you know, we've been sort of, you know, it's like Jeff was saying, this idea of these dog breeders or these guys who train military dogs. If they all get together in a group, say 5, 10 of them, hang out, talk. I mean, a new person just wants to own a dog. You know, do they need all that information that those folks have? No, you know, they just buy a shelter dog or something like that. They don't need all that information to enjoy and own a dog. You know, they don't need somebody poop on them because, you know, oh, you don't understand dog psychology. You know, you know, this, you know, it's kind of like that. And, you know, having somebody, you know, go after you like that, you know, it's not good for the hobby, I think.
No.
And when you're trying to make it accessible for everybody.
Yeah. And that's the thing, is to bring it in. But I also enjoy collecting wood and rock. I just got back from, you know, truckload basically for a client. It's going up in Idaho. Some guy's got a big, huge tank up there. But yeah, so now, you know, I pretty much collect wood. You know, I talk a lot about aquascaping because I know that's what's going to bring in new people to the hobby, those kinds of things. And it's, you know, and also look for new folks that are interested in helping others. We've got, you know, like Dennis Wong. He's one of them that's starting to help a lot of folks, doing a lot of stuff. And he's even got his own little hater group. good friend of mine. I like him a lot. But yeah, there's quite a few people. You know, I've known Karen Randall since the 90s, I guess, the 1990s. And, you know, people back then when they first met me, they thought I was this old gray beard guy because the way I talked and wrote on Aquatic Plant Digest, it seemed like I was this old professor kind of guy. And I actually am now. I actually grew into the part, which is kind of, you know, ironic, horticulture professor at, you know, American River College here. But, you know, it's something I found out I loved. And, you know, I've been teaching plants for 30 years, you know, it was kind of a simple thing for me to transition into that. And then, you know, I went back to college locally and then transferred to UC and then went to Florida for a couple of years, then came back here, got a PhD, did all that. And, you know, still retained, you know, sort of a more plain spoken kind of approach, but, you know, I can go full nerd if I need. But most times I think, you know, to get more people, you know, as a public figure, you know, sort of trying to bring more people into the hobby, you know, what is it that's needed? And a lot of the, most of the experts all agree, you know, somebody has produced a real nice aquascape, all seem to agree. It's like, you know, they might come from different areas, but they, all the roads sort of lead to the same spot when it comes to a high level of care and aquascaping. And it's very true. I, you know, I've talked to Amano, I've talked to, you know, Jeff and Mike Sinsky, talked to George, talked to Dennis, talked to Stephen, you know, David Chow. All these people are really good at aquascaping, high ranking, whatever. But they all sort of gravitate to this one place. And, you know, I think a lot of new folks and a lot of these sort of, you know, cranks, you know, that, you know, troll around on the web, they're all looking for that one weird trick. You know, it's just like the ads, you know, on your Facebook or, mm-hmm. you know, your general Yahoo page or whatever that you use. You know, they're trying to sell you something. And I think a lot of folks, you know, come to expect that. They want to believe that lie. And we're all susceptible to it, but, you know, our friends, if they're good friends, you know, say, hey, man, no, you know, that's a logical fallacy, right? And, you know, yeah, you know, it's not just this one thing. It's not a silver bullet. You know, it's all these things. It's, you know, arms in the tank, cleaning, pruning, trimming, hitting that water change, getting that little bit of filth out, keeping your filters clean, keeping the flow, you know, good. Trimming it so the flow doesn't get blocked by all those plants. You know, maybe lowering the light so you know, you don't have to trim every week. Maybe switch out some plants so you don't have to trim so much. Get some plants that don't grow so damn fast.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
There's a lot of just basic things that I think that will help new people coming into the hobby. And that's more my role. That's more, I think, people who are passionate about this hobby should really look at more as those new people. You know, if they hear a bunch of cranks on there and this, you know, this big windbag, that's going to turn them off, or they're going to see fights. You know, they click on a something, how to dose fertilizers, and my name comes up in some forum from 2002. And, you know, we've got these three people arguing, and it's this big diatribe. You know, it's like, yeah, it's going to turn them off. But if they see a cool, hot looking, you know, fish tank, and, you know, they're going to go, wow, that's, I want that. I'm going to do whatever it takes to get it. I'm going to learn everything. So I think, you know, it's not just one big hammer to get that planted tank. It's many little hammers beating down the algae, beating down, you know, poor plant growth, poor fish growth, poor shrimp health, all these things. You know, I keep a pretty holistic, you know, approach and view of, you know, sort of aquascaping and aquarium keeping in general. And I know Jeff and, you know, anybody that's worth their salt, you know, has the same view too, whether it's Karen Randall or, you know, whoever. Karen really never really got that much into aquascaping. She does really well with vivariums now, and that's something else I've gotten into, and anything with plants. Mm-hmm. It's get me. I got, you know, I got like, you know, 600 bonsai outside too. So,
oh, wow. That's awesome.
Yeah, it's that's probably more my passion at the moment than aquarium actually. So, but there's a lot to be learned. There's a lot about media, you know, the soil. Well, soil in some ways is very similar to what, you know, Amano came up with, and a lot of the approaches, you know, that he did. But, you know, a lot of, I mean, Mono had a huge hate group too. And a lot of people thought I was in on the hate group. And I was like, no, he's a real nice guy. I like him. Yeah. I might disagree with him, about some things, but, you know, actually Mike Sensky was the one who called me, told me he died. And I was like at a client working or something like that. And he called me up and let me know that he died. And I was like, damn. So, but I mean, Jeff, Mike, myself, we all knew him, had known him for many years. I think, you know, one thing that worked really well with ADA was just really that those pictures, you know, it didn't matter what he said, you know, it's kind of like, well, here it is, here's the products and here's how you do it. And he showed everybody, you know, each step, how to do it, keep it clean, trim, all that. A lot of people were like, well, I don't need to add this, this, and this, you know, well, maybe I couldn't get those products or those products were expensive or whatever. Is there another way around it? And I think, in America, that was kind of the common sort of theme that we had. And we did it with Dupla as well. And that was the whole, probably the whole impetus behind, poor man's, Dupla drops. That was one of the first sort of homemade, fertilizer. And that was a big thing with the Aquatic Plant Digest mailing list also. And that was one of the main tenets behind that was phosphate limitation. Mm-hmm. And so I kind of blew that whole thing to bits. And then I went after Dupla's heating cables and some other things like that. So it was, I mean, a lot of it is logic, philosophy, logical fallacies, scientific method, a lot of that stuff to sort of get at it. But, you know, most new folks, they're not looking for that. They just, you know, they see this nice aquascape. They just want that.
Yeah.
And do they need all this philosophy behind it? No. But, you know, the web is full of information. It's not full of knowledge. Yeah. You know?
That's very true.
I'm trying
sometimes
to figure it out.
Too much.
Yeah, and we're you know, Jeff, I think, was hitting on a key point. How do we help those new people get in there? You know, how do we provide them with that knowledge? And his sort of reference was like, well, you know, I've never remodeled a room before. And during the COVID thing, shutdown, he got on YouTube and watched a few videos, and they showed him step by step how to do it, and he did it.
Yeah.
And he was like, hey, man, you know, we should be able to do that for aquarists with aquatic plants. Mm-hmm. Why can't we? Absolutely. Why can't we do that? Mm-hmm. And, you know, George Farmer started in on this and really took a pretty aggressive approach. About 10, 12 years ago now. And he was, you know, still in the RAF at that point. Mm-hmm. And, but he was, you know, he wanted to get out. and he knew what he wanted to do once he got out. And it was this, because, you know, the demons there are quelled very well with plants and horticulture. And I've had a lot of students that, you know, in the horticulture department come through, and they had a post-traumatic stress disorder. And this really helps tap that down. Yeah. Well, just stress, just normal stress, day-to-day stress. It's a good way. You know, we have gardens in the back, and, you know, I don't want to do this. I'm going to go out in the back and hang out in the garden and, you know, maybe wire a tree. Maybe wife's going to water the tomatoes, you know, whatever. You know, we've got those sort of outlets. I think for a lot of folks, that's sort of what they're looking for, something like that. Rather than a big hairy debate or, you know, oh, this or that, or who's right, who's wrong. There's a lot to that. It's been a long pathway, I think, for myself, but there's been a lot of sort of realizations, but I think logic and sort of focus on what it is that, you know, you're trying to achieve, you know, what is your goal?
Yep.
I think a lot of people assume that, you know, method is going to equal all everybody's goal.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think this is a good spot, a good moment to take a little break. We'll try and figure out some of these connection issues, and we will be right back. You guys don't go anywhere. There's a lot more Tom Barr for you.
Hey, Paula, have you heard about the awesome sponsor that we have this month?
Yes, Oase, it's sponsoring the episodes for this month, and it's also being the sponsor for our giveaway. Hundreds of people have entered already, but it's not too late. So if you want to be the lucky winner, that's going to have a Biomaster 350 thermal, find a post on our Instagram at Rumblefish Podcast and enter the giveaway. Easy peasy.
Lemon squeezy. Thanks again, Oase, so much for sponsoring this month. Super great giveaway, and we couldn't be happier.
Thank you, Oase. All right. So I would like to know more about how was the transition into, hey, I'm just going to go pick up some fish from the river and just dump them in a tank at home, to I'm going to Aquascape and I'm just going to make plants my, you know, my passion and just my focus.
I started to think probably, you know, I had like a whole bunch of aquariums growing up in Bloomington, Indiana. And I had plants with them, but they were always sort of secondary. Mm-hmm. And I think it was, you know, probably the late 80s, 90s, early 90s when I said, I'm going to do CO2 and all the bells and whistles. But as far as, you know, sort of that transition into a full planted tank, it was pretty much an experimentation. I was using terrestrial plants, plant filters. And I think it was Karen Randall who just said, you know, why do that? Just put the plants in the tank and, you know, just focus in on those and that'll be your filter. Mm-hmm. And she was right on that. And that was a pretty good realization, a good way to sort of put it and argue in favor of that. Karen had a lot of very sort of straightforward, plain spoken ways to sort of arguments to sort of you know, appeal, I think, to that broader crowd. Might not have appealed so much to the aquascaping, you know, groups, mm-hmm. but to the common person, aquarist, yeah, it did. And she had a lot of good arguments and strong points. I think some people might have even gotten angry at both her and I, you know, because we came across kind of as a, you know, very matter of fact and supported our arguments. Mm-hmm. So she got some blowback from that, I'm sure. And I know I did when I said, mm-hmm. you know, don't use test kits, just do water changes. Oh, I hate water changes. I go, what'd you become aquarist for? You yeah. signed up for that.
Just get into
it. You didn't sign up for you know, a bunch of nitrate testing. You know, mm-hmm. but you knew the water changes are going to be part of the deal. And so I always just kind of like, you know, put it like this. If you had to breathe the same air, like inside of a bathroom, for a year, would you do it? I mean, that would be pretty gross.
Yeah.
If you never flush the toilet, except once a week, you know, mm-hmm. that's kind of in a way what's going on with the fish tank. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, these big water changes, they're great, for the fish. They're great for the tank, and it's like, oh, I never change my water, blah blah blah. And I'm like, well, let's take a look at your tank, and it shows, you know, those tanks almost always, you know, have a lot of issues as far as aquascapes and appearance, things like that. You can do non-CO2 tanks pretty well that way, mm-hmm. but with the CO2 and all that, it tends to grow things too fast. You got to trim and do some work, make it look pretty. And same way with the bonsai. I mean, yeah, you can grow bonsai without trimming them and doing much work to them. It's also known as a bush, not a bonsai. So, you know, if you don't want to trim, you don't want to water trees, bonsai is not for you. You want to keep the tree inside, bonsai not for you. And I you know, I'm very blunt with that, you know, with those comments too, in bonsai groups or with, you know, people who come over and buy trees from me. Mm-hmm. And I'm just like, no, I'm not going to sell you a tree. You're going to put it inside. No, you're going to kill it.
Yeah.
And I'm not, you know, you shouldn't buy a tree. you know, not just me, anybody, you know. So it's the same with Aquarist. And, you know, we try and help people as best we can, but sometimes, you know, they have these ideas that, you know, like, oh, well, I heard so-and-so, and I'm like, there you go.
Well, you know, they get maybe part of the information. Like, you sure can have a tank that you don't need to do water changes on, but it cannot be a high-tech tank. You cannot, you know, dose it with CO2 and just pretend that it's just going to do its thing. And you just mentioned something earlier about, like, people just wanting to believe the lies, you know, whenever the lies are convenient to them. And and that's what happens. You know, it's like, oh, yeah, you don't need to do water changes, or you don't need a filter in a tank. It's like, well, yeah, but not. It's not
well, as you look at that. You look at what, you know, the high-level folks are doing. Those methods, not just the fertilizers, not just the lights, not just, you know, well, what's their CO2 content, whatever. Look at their tanks and look at what they do to get to that point. That, I think, is a key question. It's the same is true with bonsai of trees, your progression of your aquascape. Aquascape can progress in 3 or 4 months and you can have a real knockout tank. Bonsai takes a lot longer. It might take you 10 years, you know, to get that tree looking really nice. I mean, you can go out and buy, you know, an expensive, well-done tree. But for you to actually make one from scratch and into a, you know, a beautiful tree, is it takes skill and time. And so, you know, the more you do, the better you get. And it's the same with guitar playing. It's the same with painting, with aquascaping. The more aquascapes you do, the better you get. And after 20, 30 years, you get pretty good. You know, it only took me 30 years to get this good. Yeah. You know, it's like, fuck, I don't want to do this hobby. I'm going away. You know, people will say that too. You know, it's like, oh, well, you know, after seeing this guy play bass, you know, I'm going to quit. You know, you see those comments. They're joking, but
they're thinking
maybe it. Not. But they're thinking, yeah, it's funny because it's true. That's the old saying. It's funny because it's true. But yeah, another thing that really got me interested in growing plants though was selling them. And so we had a aquarium society there in San Francisco. I was living in Marin, just across the Golden Gate.
Beautiful.
And so I'd drive down there Friday night, and I'd put in 20 different plants. And I'd walk home with $200.
Wow.
You know, once a month. And I was like, wow, this is kind of cool. I don't mind going down there talking about plants and listening to these cool talks and selling all these plants I have. Well, I kept bringing all these weird, rare plants nobody had. And so they got kind of interested, and they wanted me to do a talk. And then, you know, one thing leads to another. And then Karen came out and she said, oh, you should give a talk too. And I'm like, okay. So I sort of got into it that way too. And I still, you know, look for high end, high expensive, rare, new plants, because those are the things that are going to sell.
Yeah.
And so that helps a lot, like if you're doing a horticulture business as well, not just an aquatic horticulture business, but any horticulture business. People want those rare, kind of unusual plants, and they want somebody, you know, you have to be able to propagate them too. So there's propagation, and then there's aquascaping. But generally, if you're good at propagation, you can usually do pretty well at aquascaping too. And even if you can't, well, you can still do Dutch tanks. So, yeah. And Dutch tanks are harder than nature style. They're much harder.
For sure.
They won't win the Amano ADA contest, but they are much harder than any of those tanks. And it requires a lot more work and skill.
For sure.
It takes more work and skill. There's no doubt about it. And, you know, you don't see people with 10 or a whole studio full of Dutch tanks.
Imagine.
You see like one, maybe two, and that's it, man. They'll wear you out. They'll wear you out.
It's sure so beautiful, you, but yeah.
Yeah. And, you know, for some people, you know, those Iwagumi layouts, those are really nice. And yeah, I can do them. I like them. But, you know, do I want one for myself?
No.
No. because it's just one plant.
Exactly.
And it kind of, you know, it's got a nice impact. The essence of it is nice. But for me, you know, just for my own interest, it doesn't appeal to me.
Yeah.
To resolve that problem, I do outside. I'll do the bonsai, and I'll put the rocks in a shallow pan, put the soil down, ADA soil, and then I'll put my rocks in, and then I'll put HC. And it grows fine here in California. It grow fine down San Diego real well all year round there, actually. And it grows and makes a nice little carpet. I get that same vibe and feel, but, you know, I don't have to do anything to it.
Yeah.
I just water it once a day and that's it, you know. And I'm watering my bonsai anyway, so it's, you know, just turn the hose over that way a little bit and I'm done. And that's much, 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 much easier than any fish tank to care for.
There's a lot less factors that enter the equation when you're growing something outside of the water.
Yep, exactly. And so a lot of people, I just started doing that mostly just because I had this interest in, you know, all these rock formations and things like that, hardscapes. But I didn't want to give up my fish tank for that because I had a bunch of rare plants or, you know, had a sort of a weird aquascape I had in my mind that I wanted to try to do rather than just, you know, have this layout. But I still have that feel, that same essence. But I just put it outside, you know, next to my bonsai instead. And so a lot of the ideas come from Japanese landscaping and bonsai. And it's kind of interesting. I can take that stuff from the aquarium and then put it back to bonsai. Mm-hmm. So it's come full circle. It's kind of interesting to do that. The practice that I'm doing there out there in the bonsai helps very much in the aquarium. And so it's pretty interesting to be able to kind of tie all those things together. But a lot of horticulture, a lot of the elements sort of transfer over really well, say like to carnivorous plants or vivarium or to, greenhouse production. That's how a lot of that's how most of your aquatic plants are produced in greenhouses or, you know, sometimes under shade cloth, things like that. But, a lot of those things all sort of coalesce into a certain area. You know, I'm very interested in pretty much all things horticulture, not just, you know, aquatic plants. Using these other sort of elements, you know, bonsai or whatever. I use bonsai a lot in my teaching. And the students really like it. You know, it's something they can, you know, take home with them, that kind of thing. And they really enjoy it. But it teaches them a lot about media, teaches them a lot about style, art, and just the limits, how far you can push that plant before you kill it.
We often talk about the crossover or the common places again between any plant or any tree, you know, house plants, especially in my case, and aquariums. You know, you come to my house and my living room looks like a jungle pretty much. There's plants everywhere, inside of the tanks and outside of the tanks and halfway inside or outside. Once you get that bug, you get the plant bug. It's just plants. It's just green. And, you know, in whichever form or shape you're cultivating it and nurturing it and just, you know, admiring it. And that's just, it's just hard to get away from it.
Yeah. We had the inside of our house, you know, filled up with a lot of house plants at one point. And, pretty much pushed everything outside except the aquariums and the vivariums. And one of the reasons was just mold and high humidity in the house.
Yeah.
The next house that we moved in didn't have so many open windows also. And it was a little smaller. So actually it was a little bigger, but it's just not set up so much for the house plants.
Mm-hmm.
And then all our house plants, I keep them outside most of the year.
Wow.
It's just that when we get a hard freeze or something like that, I just put them in the garage.
You put them in the garage, yeah.
Yeah, for the house. I have a bunch of lady palms, a bunch of raphis species, bunch of, you know, peace lilies. There's a whole bunch of begonias, a lot of ficus, a whole bunch of staghorn ferns. Nice. And that's one of the things I teach students how to make at, you know, for the horticulture department. And me and the department chair will do that. We'll trade off, and he'll do it, you know, half of it, and I'll do the other half. And we'll make all these new staghorn ferns mounted on a, you know, block of wood.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Awesome. Yeah. And so students really like that kind of stuff too.
I miss mine. I had a staghorn fern. And when I moved, because I moved from the coast to the mountains, and I gave it away to a neighbor because I didn't think it was going to make it through the weather change, you know, from the humid coast to the dryness of the pre-desert up here in the mountains. I miss it.
It'll do fine. It's mostly, they don't like the hard freeze.
Yeah. Mm. And we'll get snow. That's and stuff up here. So yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. If you get in snow, no.
Yeah. I had to part with some of my plants when we moved up here, but it's all good. Now I get to have I get to have a sequoia in my backyard, so that's totally worth it.
Yeah, well, we've got a 200-foot redwood in the neighbor's yard right next to us, so I've got that. It's nice because it blocks the afternoon sun, mm-hmm. but only during the hot part of the year. In the winter, the sun kind of misses that and gets so we still get the sun in the winter. Perfect. In the summer, so it's nice.
That's awesome.
Yeah, that's a nice, good position for that tree. I'm very happy with it. Now I have to water it, so that's the other big thing. So those things suck water.
Yeah, water, it's an issue.
Well, whenever I drain my tanks, it goes onto the plants outside.
Yeah.
So you know, there's no waste of water here. Well, a little bit, but. Not too much.
Yeah, that's the smartest thing. Like when you see people just dumping it down the sink or drain, it's like, well, don't you have roses or grass or a pond outside or something?
You know, no, but you know, if you have a house with land, or an apartment even. It's tough. For clients, I'll usually install a drain, you know, because they almost always have automated water changers. Mm-hmm. And the water goes out to the landscaping plants, and they can adjust, you know, and they have the gardener adjust the watering routine to match, you know, with the water changes. Mm-hmm. So they use less water that way.
That's pretty genius.
Well, it's just things that you kind of need to, we all have to kind of keep in mind, you know, because
I need to put in the automatic water changers for the tanks here. And I will coming up probably this year. So I got to drill through the hole in the wall. And then bring the replacement water in too. But and I'll run that out to the garden, the water itself, I'll run out to the garden. So yeah, I'm looking forward to getting that done. I'll have two tanks and then two vivariums inside the house, and then everything else. That's enough. That's more than enough. I have more. I got to install the automatic water changer or automatic watering irrigation for the bonsai too at some point.
But, what do you keep in those vivariums? I'm just kind of curious about
that. I keep rare, weird plants. Mm-hmm. And, you know, like one of the things I started growing was the high-grow chai, that real mm-hmm. pink plants, like $50-$100 for a little cup.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And I was like, this is robbery. This is a weed. And so I put a few of them from that tissue culture into the vivarium where it's real nice and humid, plenty of light. It grows like crazy. I'm like, well, I can plant this outside, probably in one of those domes and little seedling trays, and then put a dome on it. And then, yeah, it grows great. So I've probably sold, I don't know, $1,000 worth of it out that way. And it grows real easy. And, you know, I don't have to water it, but maybe once every 3 days outside, you know, most of the year. Awesome. And so I can grow that. I can grow Cephalandras, all those other plants, mm-hmm. Any stem plant pretty much outside in these little trays with, you know, Kellogg's, you know, palm cactus soil and a little Osmocote. And I'm good for, you know, 3 to 6 months just doing that, you know? So, you know, it's easy to sell the plants, easy to grow them that way.
There's always a demand for anything that's rare or, you know, hard to find, hard to source.
Mm-hmm.
That's a smart move there for sure.
So I'm always looking for the new plant, you know, always something new, interesting, weird. And, you know, somebody wants something I have, then I want something they have. And so we, you know, ship stuff across, you know, international waters and all that to get it. So it's how a lot of stuff comes in. I thought we would have far fewer plants. I thought that the number of them would drop off at some point, but it's not. It's, there's always something new coming out. It's crazy.
Yeah, it's fascinating.
I never thought it'd be this, there'd be this many choices. There's probably 600-700 species out now. When I got in, there was maybe 20, 30 max. Wow.
So if you have to pick one plant from your collection, only one to showcase, which one would that be?
Usually the one that everybody wants. The other one might be, you know, the one I don't have yet. So those are usually the plants. I mean, some of the plants that I really like are like real strange and weird, and you know, you'd have to go to Tanzania to get it, or New Caledonia, or the jungles of Sarawak and Borneo, or you know, something like that. And there a lot of them, some of them might, you know, it might be inappropriate for aquariums. Some of them might be, but they're aquatic still. Yeah. You know, they're more like a tree. Like, you know, I have a bald cypress, you know, I grow those as well. I love those trees, just, you know, from being in Florida.
We have the people from Borneo Aquatics sending us a box with a bunch of their plants, a mix of terrestrial and aquatic tanks, aquatic plants. And we're excited to see what's in there because we don't know what they're sending, but they're sending us a big box with plants for review.
The vivarium is sort of taken over quite a bit. I have, you know, a bunch of heterophylla, utricularia heterophylla in there. I've got the dicranio pygnium, the so-called black velvet, Kula eula. Actually, it's the Kuna Indians over by the San Blas Islands. Where this plant comes from. It looks like it's not a palm tree, but it looks like a small black purple colored leaf palm tree, about 6-8 inches tall.
That's awesome.
And it's got this crazy looking flower. It looks like cotton candy or something that pokes out, fluorescent white, and this black, you know, leaf plant. There's also, you know, begonia, amphimox, begonia ferox, which has those real super spiky leaves, looks like cactus leaves almost, but it's a begonia.
Yeah, begonias are all the rage these days. They're definitely.
And then the Darth Vader Ania, you know, that's a really cool one. There's a big story behind all that, but that's another one that's notoriously difficult to grow and expensive, but it's not that expensive. It's actually come way down. It used to be $250-$300, and now it's down in the $50 to $60 range. But yeah, I think that dicranio pygnium is a really neat plant, and it's doing really well. And the way to grow that though is with seed. That's the best way to do it. That one. Some plants are better done via seed, and some are done, you know, cuttings. Different things like that. So,
well, we could be here talking plants all day.
Oh, for sure. I love this conversation right now.
For sure. But we're running out of time. So thank you very much, Tom, for making some time in your day to be with us. It was a pleasure chatting with you and just getting to know the person behind the myth.
Okay. Yep. I'm not this old gray beard guy.
No,
so.
we can attest to that. Thank you.
I'm old, but I am now. I'm getting there.
Much, but, and we'll maybe catch you next time you come down to San Diego.
It's been such a pleasure. Thank you so much.
You guys could probably ask Jeff, and he'd be happy to do this too.
Yeah, he
would talk your ear off.
We were actually just talking about him earlier, like that we should send him a message and have a chat with him as well. So
yeah, please do. I think he'd be very receptive.
That's awesome.
Awesome.
Well, thanks again, and we'll talk to you soon.
Take care.
Thank you.
Take care.
And that's all we have for you guys this week. We hope we really enjoyed the chat with Tom Barr. It really was a good one. And we will come back next week with another guest. In the meantime, if you want to support us and you want to help us pay the podcast bills, you can go check our website at rumblefishpodcast.com and maybe take a look at our merch and get yourself a hoodie or a coffee mug. It would mean a lot to us. Thanks also to Oase for sponsoring the episodes for this month. And don't forget to enter the giveaway. You know, there's still a couple more weeks to enter. We will pick a winner the last day of this month, October 31st. So go and enter at our Instagram page. And again, we'll see you next week. Thank you. Keep it rambling.